Both his expression and tone were calm, calculating. He looked across the faces in the room, as if deciding who to start with first. "You," he finally said, pointing to the Eastoffs.
"Your Majesty,"
Lord Eastoff began, falling on one knee.
"Have you been in contact with your former king?"
He shook his head fervently.
"No, Your Majesty, not at all."
Jameson pursed his lips a little, tilting his head.
"I find that hard to believe after receiving this," he said, holding up the letter. "The kings of Koroa and Isolt meet annually, as you know. I suspect you've been in dear old King Quentin's entourage these many years past."
Lord Eastoff nodded.
"This is my second time meeting with him as a sovereign in my own right, but isn't it interesting that he suddenly has decided to bring his queen with him?"
Jameson raised his eyebrows.
"Can you think of any reason he might do that?"
"Who could guess at his motives, Your Majesty?
As you know, he's very impulsive, and recently he's become less and less predictable." Lord Eastoff was clearly sweating.
"I find it as surprising as you do, as he rarely lets the queen accompany him abroad."
"I think he has heard my heart has finally settled," Jameson announced. "I think he knows I intend to give Koroa a queen, and he is bringing that wench to compare her to the fairest lady in our kingdom."
He wasn't shouting the words, but he was very close, so it was hard to know if it was intended to be a compliment or not. After all that fretting in my room, I couldn't see why I'd gotten so bothered for something that seemed so common. Didn't kings often travel with their wives? What did it matter if we were seated side by side? Then I pushed down the only reason that crossed my mind as to why this could be a bad thing, that when placed next to a proper queen, I would look foolish, and all the lords we'd been swaying to support me would be lost. I ducked my head as he went on.
"I'm just very curious how he only learned of her importance the week after you arrived."
He leaned back on his throne.
"I've known that man my whole life. He will come and disparage the Lady Hollis in any way he can, and I ought to know as he's attempted to do the same to me."
"Your Majesty, regardless of what he thinks—"
"Silence!"
Lord Eastoff lowered his head even deeper into a bow, wiping at the sweat across his brow. Behind him, his wife reached for her daughter's hand, clutching it tight. Jameson stood and stalked across the raised platform like an animal in a cage, looking for the weak link in the bars to break through.
"You will be front and center for all events, and as new Koroan citizens, on your absolute best behavior. Should Quentin come across anything about you to draw complaint, you'll find yourselves a head length shorter."
"Yes, Your Majesty," the Eastoffs chorused back at him breathlessly. Even I was having a hard time finding my lungs.
"I believe there are 3 or 4 other high-ranking Isolten families in the castle. You will pass on this instruction to them. If you want to stay here, I expect perfect allegiance."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"Lady Eastoff, you must train Lady Hollis in Isolten manners. I want her to make that girl Quentin put on the throne look like a joke."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
This woman, who I'd only seen that one time in passing, offered me a small but reassuring smile. Something about her expression said that she wouldn't let me fail.
"Lord and Lady Bright," Jameson said to my parents, "I am charging you with making sure Hollis knows enough of what's happening with Moorland and Great Perrine to be able to speak should she be approached."
My father heaved out a ragged sigh, twisting that silver ring again. It was a very special ring, one of hundreds passed down from men who'd served directly under King Estus in battle. One would think it'd be handled with care. All he ever used it for was worrying.
"That is a lot to cover, Your Majesty."
And any shortcomings on that will be accounted to you, sir. I am well aware of how capable Lady Hollis is, and I will not be made a fool of,
Jameson thundered.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Father bowed deeply.
Anyone else have something to say?
Jameson asked, his dark eyes searching us. I hesitantly raised my hand and he nodded towards me. As the Eastoffs are artisans, mightn't it be nice to have something made to mark the occasion? Twin items of some kind for you and King Quentin. Something to mark you as peers, especially if he is intimidated by your youth and strength, which very well may be the cause for him parading his wife. Perhaps it would pacify him to offer up a gesture of peace. I quickly peeked over at Silas, his long hair still a mess from sleep. Like his mother's, his eyes were reassuring, and I sighed, hoping this idea would be good for both of us. Jameson smiled, though it was colder than usual.
See, Lord Bright? Your daughter's mind is faster than yours, even on your best day.
He turned to the Eastoffs.
Do as she says, and make it quick. They will be here on Friday.
My stomach plummeted to the floor. Friday? That was tomorrow. Jameson had told me they'd be coming at the end of the week. How had I completely lost track of time? And worse, how was I supposed to prepare everything in a day? He stood, ending the meeting, and everyone dispersed. I pressed my hand against my stomach, watching Jameson's angry back as he stormed away. I didn't know what I was going to do. Besides the fact that they had been longtime enemies of Kuroa, I didn't know much about Isoltans. Lessons in their manners? Understanding continental politics? I doubted even Delia Grace could manage all that in such a short time.
When shall I come to you, my lady?
Lady Eastoff asked quietly, dropping into a deep curtsy, a gesture I was still adjusting to. I'm sure you haven't had a chance to eat yet. Do that first and then come as soon as you are able. She nodded and left with her family, the littlest one sniffling. Lord Eastoff got on his knee again to speak to him.
You have nothing to fear, Saul, he promised. This is a different king, a kinder king. See how he asks us to help? All will be well.
Behind this little one, Silas and Sullivan were there to ruffle his hair and offer comfort. Silas looked up from his brother and offered me another smile similar to his mother's, though, admittedly, her eyes didn't sparkle like his. In truth, I'd never seen anyone's eyes sparkle like his.
You'd better be up to this,
Father warned me in passing, making me aware that I'd been staring.
You will not humiliate us in front of the lords again.
I sighed. I'd gone from being the Lady Jameson was going to dance with at dinners to his official companion for a visit from a foreign king. From what I remembered of Jameson's mother, dozens of tasks fell on her for state visits. Was I expected to do everything a queen would? I shook my head. I couldn't handle this alone. I needed my ladies. Chapter 10. No, I said as Nora pulled out another dress. Too dark.
She's right,
Delia Grace agreed reluctantly.
And maybe we should have something altered. The Isoltans do wear different sleeves.
I would knock over every single goblet on the table, I commented with a laugh, which she joined in with rather quickly.
And look like a jester, she added.
I shook my head. I just want to seem regal. I want to look like I belong beside Jameson.
I think you need to stick with your signature gold, Delia Grace insisted. And then, for the tournament, the rose dress will look nice in the sun.
Nora agreed.
Rose looks lovely against your skin, and Delia Grace and I can see what we own that will look best behind you. I promise we won't distract. Delia Grace was visibly inhaling slowly through her nose, not looking pleased to have someone speak for her.
I think anything in a cream color will look nice. Or the obvious Koroan red. Whatever you'd like, my lady.
Some of the anger had passed, but not all of it. Delia Grace went to answer the knock at the door, and I trailed behind her, knowing it would be Lady Eastoff. She entered quickly, followed by her daughter, and they both sank into curtsies.
My Lady Hollis, please allow me to introduce my daughter, Scarlet.
Very nice to formally meet you both. Please come in.
She clasped her hands together as she walked.
Where would you like to start?
I sighed. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not the best pupil, but I just need to learn enough about Isolde to not look like an absolute fool. Lady Eastoff's face was equal parts sweet and serious as she weighed her words.
Every woman in your position has had a moment like this, when their era, so to speak, began. We will do everything we can to help you shine.
My shoulders slump as she broke the tension I'd been carrying ever since I'd woken up this morning.
Thank you.
I held my hand out, gesturing that they should settle in at my table. Lady Eastoff took the seat closest to me.
We have very little time, so we need to get to the important things first.
I need to tell you about King Quentin, she said, looking grave as I took my place.
He is a dangerous man.
You may already know that the line of the Pardis family is almost as old as the Barclay family. I nodded, though I was only sort of aware of that fact. Jameson was the 7th descendant from King Estus, and no one on the continent could boast a direct line as long as the Koroans. That I knew.
Like all countries, we have had good kings and bad ones, but there is something dark about King Quentin. He has always been hungry for power, wielding it as carelessly as a child, but fear has made him worse with age, and now he's old and paranoid. His first wife, Queen Vera, miscarried several times and has been in the grave for 6 years now. Prince Hadrian is his only living child, and he is of a sickly disposition. King Quentin recently married a very young woman in hopes of producing more heirs.
Valentina?
Valentina, she confirmed. But so far, it's been fruitless. All of his hopes now rest on Prince Hadrian, who I've heard some princess is reluctantly marrying next year. The poor boy looks as if he could die at any moment.
Is he really so ill? I asked. Lady Eastoff made a face at her daughter, who answered for them.
He's managed to live this long, so who can tell?
Scarlet hedged.
Perhaps he was just meant to be a pale shade of green.
I allowed that comment a little smile before flopping back in my chair. So your king is worried because his line may end with either himself or his son?
Yes, Lady Eastoff replied.
And there is no one to pick it up and maintain peace? She hesitated.
He tends to eliminate those who could usurp him.
Oh.
So, I don't think I understand. What good does that do him?
None as far as anyone with any sort of reason can see, Scarlet answered quickly.
But, as we said, fear has made him mad, and the best anyone can do is steer clear at this point.
Lady Eastoff continued.
Of course, you should obey your king. Shine, be the best you can be, but also stay away from King Quentin if you can.
I nodded. What of Valentina?
I'm sorry to say that we don't know her well, Scarlet began, sharing a concerned glance with her mother. Few people do, but she's young like us, so if you can keep her entertained, that might get you on her good side. I turned to Nora and Delia Grace.
Entertaining is generally my strong suit, but I'm not sure how to do that without knowing her interests.
Nora sighed. Perhaps we can take her to the town. show her some of the shops?
Good. Yes.
And we will think of more, I promised Lady Eastoff.
And I will continue to think, Scarlet added. If I remember anything, I'll make sure to tell you. And since plenty of courtiers will come with the king, we can ask some of them when they arrive if they have any ideas.
I sighed in relief.
Thank you. I've been told my whole life that Isultans were more like stones than people. It seems I was misinformed.
Lady Eastoff smiled conspiratorially.
Maybe wait until you meet the king before you change your mind completely.
I laughed easily, and she and Scarlet joined in. I was grateful that if I had questions over the visit, I had someone I could go to.
I admire you, Lady Eastoff admitted. So young and so brave.
I made a face.
Brave?
It's no small thing to become queen. Even Valentina I admire for it, regardless of how I might feel about her otherwise.
I swallowed. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous.
Which is natural. But you are already doing the best thing any of us could. You're encouraging your king to favor peace.
She shook her head.
No one could do more.
I nodded, looking down at my hands. Her words were generous, but that didn't stop me from worrying that I would be the weak link in the chain, causing chaos to break out at any moment.
King Jameson seems quite taken by you, Scarlet offered. How did you manage to catch his eye?
I saw Delia Grace place a hand on her hip, her smirk saying everything.
It was mostly chance, I replied. The king had been flirting with a few girls at court, though it was clear to most everyone that they weren't serious.
His father had been in the grave about a year and a half at that point. His mother passed maybe 3 months after King Marcellus.
Yes, Lady Eastoff said. My husband and I came to both funerals.
I noted that curiously. They must have been a very high-ranking family to accompany King Quentin on so many international trips.
Delia Grace and I, we were dancing together one night in the Great Room. We were holding one another by the wrists, spinning and spinning like tops, when we lost our grip and fell backward. Delia Grace fell into the arms of some other ladies, and I fell into Jameson's. I had to laugh for a moment. It was a bit ridiculous that this was how I'd won Jameson's heart.
Lady Eastoff sighed, and Scarlet rested her head on her chin, taken in by the tale.
I was so overcome with the hilarity of the moment, I was laughing, blissfully unaware of who was holding me. By the time I stood up to thank him, he was laughing too. Everyone said it was the first time they'd heard him laugh since his parents died, and I have been living to make him smile ever since. I think everyone thought he'd move on eventually.
Not everyone, Delia Grace reminded me.
Almost everyone, Nora chimed in with a wink.
I smirked at that before turning to Delia Grace. Well, you've always had more confidence in me than I ever have.
But it really was all chance. Had it been another quarter turn, we'd have both landed on our bottoms. Another half turn and I'd have been on the floor, and Delia Grace would be hosting you today while I faithfully served her.
Nora nodded, then spoke again.
Well, if she'd have us.
She had a fair point, and it made me laugh yet again. Even Delia Grace had an amused little grin on her face.
I suppose I'd be lucky to have you both, she teased.
It's good you have a close group of friends, Lady Eastoff said. It's wise to know exactly who you can trust. Why, even Queen Valentina only keeps one lady.
Really? I might have to ask her about that. I'd prefer to keep my household small. I mean, when the time comes.
Lady Eastoff grimaced.
You might have to wait a while to speak to her at all.
Why?
Protocol. Only the head of the house speaks first. As you are not married, your parents should introduce you, but the king may bypass them and do it himself. Either is fine, But typically, the higher-ranked person speaks first, and if that doesn't happen... There was a long pause. Was I not going to speak to this woman at all?
If you have any doubts, treat Quentin and Valentina like they're superior in every situation. Even if they're not, they'll appreciate the flattery and be more likely to respond kindly.
Right. What about meals? I've been sitting on the king's right, but I'm assuming that we will go to King Quentin now. Should I try to... Without knocking, my parents barged in, my father holding several books and scrolls in his hands.
You can go,
my mother said briskly to Lady Eastoff.
Mother, father, Lady Eastoff is my guest. Please show her...
The king gave me a job, my father interrupted. Are you suggesting I ignore it?
Lady Eastoff smiled and rose from her seat.
Call on me any time, Lady Hollis. If we think of anything else concerning the queen, we'll send word.
A pleasure, Lord Bright, Lady Bright. My father shoved my flowers aside, rolling out a map.
Sit. We have a lot to discuss. Great Perrine is on the edge of civil war, and I don't even know where to begin with Moorland.
I sighed, looking at the mud-colored maps. It wouldn't have mattered who was teaching me. About 20 minutes in, and my mind was already full to the brim. Between protocol and current affairs, there wasn't space for anything else. And what was worse was that I was nowhere close to knowing everything I needed to for tomorrow. Chapter 11. After my parents left, Nora and Delia Gray spent the rest of the day testing me on what I'd learned thus far. For every answer I got right, I got to take a bite of pie, so naturally I was starving by dinner time. As we walked to the great room, Nora whispered over my shoulder,
"Try not to look so glum. This is a great honor." "I can't help it. I'm never going to be able to get all this right, not this fast."
Delia Grace leaned in.
"She's right. Smile. None of this matters as much as you keeping Jameson happy."
I sighed, pulling myself up taller as we entered to bows and polite smiles. Jameson was, as always, delighted to see me. I thought of his words when he'd taken me back to the jewel room. He'd said himself that all he wanted me to be was exactly who I was. How was I supposed to balance that with the things everyone else expected me to be? Surely if I failed him in front of a not-quite enemy, his affections would fade. Part of me wondered if that wasn't such a bad thing. I shook my head, trying to get myself together. Only an idiot would pass up a king.
"My own heart," Jameson greeted me, kissing my cheek in front of the entire court. "How has your day gone?"
"I'm just going to hope that King Quentin's hearing is starting to fade so he won't know how little I've remembered from my lessons."
Jameson laughed at that, and I wished I could laugh myself.
"Oh, I suppose you're right to have a healthy fear of Quentin. Growing up, I did myself. Had to get over it when I took the crown," he said casually, reaching for his cup.
"What did you, of all people, have to fear? You're the king."
He made a face.
"Well, I wasn't when we met. He looked like a villain from an old tale since the first time I laid eyes on him. As I got to see him in action, I've realized that villain might be too kind a word."
Gracious. I had quite suddenly lost my appetite. "What has he done that made you think that?" Jameson didn't say anything straight away, looking as if he had a hard time choosing his words.
"It's not any one thing. It's everything. He acts as if the world has caused him some great offense, and he spends his waking hours trying to get his revenge."
"On what? On who?" Jameson lifted his cup to me as if I'd made a great point.
"No one can ever be sure, my darling Hollis. My father spent his days prepared to make war with Quentin, and if it hadn't been for my mother, they'd have battled more often than they already did. But if I must go to war, I want there to be clear gain behind it. None of these silly squabbles. I'm sure a time will come when I go after Quentin for a very good reason, but until then, I will strive for peace.
I smiled at him in complete adoration. You are a wonderful king. From the bottom of my heart, I mean that. He reached for my hand, taking it in both of his and kissing it with fervor.
I know you do,
he whispered,
and I have no doubt that you will make for a remarkable queen.
The word still sent my heart racing. It was going to be an unimaginable thing the day I was given a crown.
That reminds me, he said. I have a surprise for you.
I looked at Jameson pointedly. I swear, if you've invited some king or another to join tomorrow's festivities and I have to learn a whole other set of protocol tonight, I will go back and jump in the river. I'll stay there this time, I mean it. He laughed and laughed, and I couldn't tell if he enjoyed seeing me under pressure or if I was just very good at fooling him.
No, it's nothing like that. Just something to help you. But, he said, looking back to Nora and Delia Grace, I think I will need some assistance.
Then he held up his napkin. Chapter 12.
Don't you dare peek,
Jameson insisted, holding the cloth tightly around my eyes. I giggled. So long as you promise not to let me fall.
Don't worry, Delia Grace whispered, holding my hand. I'll keep a lookout for you, as always.
I gripped her hand a little tighter as we made our way up a curving set of stairs, thankful that, despite our recent ups and downs, I could still count on her. Your Majesty, where in the world are you taking me?
Just a few more steps, he sang into my ear, his breath tickling my neck. Nora, could you please get the door?
I heard a sigh, a hushed sound of awe, and felt Delia Grace pause gripping my hand. I reached my hand higher up Jameson's coat, taking in a handful of velvet as I held on tightly, hoping not to fall.
All right, Hollis, step this way.
Delia Grace reached around, positioning me, taking a while before she was content. With a swift flick of his hand, Jameson sent the fabric flying. The first thing I saw was him. I had turned to see his expression, hoping to find him glowing with contentment. And he absolutely was. Oh, those sparkling honey brown eyes that made the stars jealous. Even at the end of a horrible day, just being able to look up at that smile and know I put it there was enough to make it all better. The second thing I saw was exactly where I was standing. I took in the Queen's chambers, and my heart very nearly stopped beating.
The last four queens of Koroa have slept in these rooms. Seeing as you will be receiving Queen Valentina and her company tomorrow, it's only proper they belong to you.
Your Majesty, I whispered. No.
Maybe if you can look at the river, you won't feel the need to go jump in it again, he commented casually, ushering me over to the window.
The moon was low in the sky, fat and full. It was shimmering off the river in the distance and casting light upon the city. I remembered the view Delia Grace and I'd had of the Colvard River one night in empty apartments a floor or two higher than this. We snuck up with a bottle of mead and very thick shawls, talking and waiting for the sun to rise. When it did, the river reflected it back, and it was as if the entire city was covered in gold. I remembered thinking there was no possible way another room in the castle could match it. I was wrong.
I've had new linens put in, of course, Jameson said, walking me in. And these rugs on the walls are new, too. I thought they might help with the draft.
My heart was skipping beats left and right, trying desperately to keep up. I leaned into him.
Your Majesty, I am not queen.
He smiled again, so pleased with himself.
But you will be.
He kissed my hand.
I am simply bestowing upon you what is rightfully yours. A few months ahead of schedule.
I could hardly catch my breath. You are far too good to me, Your Majesty.
This is nothing, he whispered. When you are queen, you shall be drowning in jewels and gifts and praise until death. And, I suspect, for many years after, he added with a wink. Look around the room. Settle in. My men will be moving all your things in the morning before Quentin arrives.
I was still quite stunned. I was to live in the queen's apartments. They were mine.
It seems silly to tell the sun good night, but I do it anyway. Good night, Lady Hollis. I'll see you in the morning.
The second the doors closed, Nora and Delia Grace shared their first moment of true camaraderie. They clasped each other's hands, jumping and squealing as if the apartments had been gifted to them.
Can you believe this? Delia Grace exclaimed.
She grabbed my hands and pulled me back from the entry space, where the queen received her guests, to the bedroom proper. To the right of the large four-poster bed was the sweeping window that looked down upon the city and the river, and to the left along the wall was a passage to an antechamber. I knew from my few visits to the queen's rooms that her lady slept in that space. But along the wall behind the bed, there was another door, one I'd never been through. Nora and Delia Grace followed in hushed awe as I pushed the heavy door open. The apartment went on and on. There were desks for writing and rooms for private meetings, and in another antechamber, a collection of armoires for my clothes. I felt faint, like the floors were set upon the river itself, lilting with the tides. Delia Grace, will you walk me back to the bed? I asked, holding out an arm. She came and grabbed it quickly, concern painting her face. Hollis? Here. Nora pulled back the drapes on the bed and I settled down, slowing my breathing. Aren't you happy? Delia Grace asked. You're getting what every girl in the kingdom wants. Of course. It's just... I had to stop to slow my breathing. It's so much at once. I'm to entertain a queen, take all of these lessons, and move to new rooms? In a day? I lamented. They'll be here tomorrow. We're here to help you, Nora offered. I shook my head, starting to cry. I don't think I want this. You need sleep, Delia Grace said before turning to Nora. Get her shoes.
I don't even have a nightgown, I sniveled.
I'll go and fetch one. Just stay calm. Nora was gone in a flash, and I was left with Delia Grace, who had moved on to the task of taking off my shoes. There was no water in the pitcher, no fire in the hearth. Linens had been brought and candles had been lit so the room would be suitable for presentation, but the apartments weren't quite ready to be lived in. Let's go back to my room tonight, I murmured. We can do this in the morning.
No, she insisted, pushing me back onto the bed. The king will see it as a slight. You've been given the second best lodgings in the entire palace, and you want to leave them for a handful of personal items? Have you lost your senses completely?
I knew she was right, but it felt like I'd gone from spinning out of Delia Grace's hands to the right hand of the throne overnight, and I did not know how to handle it. I lay on my side as Delia Grace made short work of loosening my dress. Within a few minutes, Nora was back with a nightgown, robe, and slippers. She also had my brush and a small vase.
I thought you'd appreciate seeing something of yours in here, she said. Shall I put it on the vanity?
I gave a small nod, managing to get out a smile as she set it in place. Delia Grace sat me up as Nora pulled back the curtain to see into the antechamber. Space for 4 or 5, I think, should you want to go ahead and choose your ladies. If it goes beyond the two of you, you can choose, but not today. Nora, see if you can find some maids, Delia Grace commanded. I'm going to get her in bed and get the trimmings. Firewood, flowers. Should we go back to her room and move some more of her belongings? The king said he'd do it in the morning. It can keep until then. They planned around me like I wasn't even there. Like this wasn't all happening for and because of me. And because I couldn't bear to think of anything more for the day, I let them. The drapes were closed around my bed, making for a cozy and quiet space, but it didn't entirely block out the sound of them moving around the apartments or the maids building a fire. I didn't go to sleep, but I heard when Delia Grace and Nora finally did, and that was when I found my shoes and quietly slipped out of the room. Chapter 13. By this point in the night, I knew the moon would be shining through the stained glass windows of the great room. I passed corners where couples whispered and giggled, and I was bowed to by guards and servants working at even this late hour. In the great room, the fire from the wide hearth was down to glowing embers, and a lone servant was stoking it, getting the last bits of heat where he could. I stood in the middle of the archway, looking at the explosion of color on the floor. Nothing, of course, could match the way the colors danced in the roaring light of day, but there was something other, something almost sacred about the way they fell by moonlight. Still the same designs, the same patterns, and yet quieter, more deliberate. "Is that you, Lady Hollis?" I turned. The person I'd thought was a servant at the fire was actually Silas Eastoff. Of course he was here. In the moment when I was wondering if it would be worth abandoning my king, I ran into someone who'd done something similar to his. And who could say which of us was a better criminal? He might be the worst person I could have come upon. Not just because he too had been tempted to the life of a traitor, tempted and succumbed, but because there was something about those blue eyes that made me think. I couldn't even say what they made me think. I tried to look dignified, as if my night robe was the same as a gown in my eyes. It was difficult under the weight of his stare. "Yes. What are you doing up at such an hour?" He smiled. "I could ask the same of you." I stood taller. "I asked first." "You really are going to be queen, aren't you?" he said in a teasing tone. "If you must know, someone thought it would be a good idea to make 2 matching pieces of metalwork for 2 great kings in a single day. Sullivan and I only stopped working about 20 minutes ago." I bit my lip, my attempts at being aloof vanishing before my guilt. "Oh, I'm so sorry. When I said that, the date of the visit had completely slipped my mind. It's taken me by surprise as well." "Has it? My mother said you were quite a willing student today." He crossed his arms and leaned sideways against the wall, as if this were an everyday meeting, as if he knew me so well. "Willing, yes, but good? That remains to be seen." I pulled my robe a little tighter. "I've never been the brightest of the girls at court. If I ever forget that fact, Delia Grace reminds me. Or my parents. But your mother and Scarlet were quite patient with me today. I may need them to come by again tomorrow. I mean today, I suppose." "I can tell them if you like." "You'll also have to tell them I've moved."
"Moved? In a day?"
"In an hour." I brushed my hair back and swallowed, trying not to sound as irritated as I felt. "King Jameson moved me into the Queen's apartments tonight. I don't think my parents even know about it yet. I have no idea how the Privy Council is going to take it once the news becomes public." I rubbed at my forehead, trying to smooth the wrinkles of worry away. "He wanted me to look the part before King Quentin arrives.
I have jewels coming. He mentioned some new dresses, and suddenly I have new rooms.
It's all a bit much, I confessed.
Isn't this what you want, though?
You will be the best-kept woman in the kingdom.
I sighed.
I know.
So I'm not sure what...
I paused. I was telling this boy far too much. He was a stranger and a foreigner. Who was he to ask about my life? But in that same moment, I realized I'd rather talk to him about my troubles than anyone else, even the people who were truly meant to know everything about me. I suppose it's not the gifts I'm receiving, but the pace at which they're coming. You're quite right, I have everything I could ask for and more. His smile didn't seem as genuine as it had before.
Good.
I could sense an ending coming that I wasn't prepared for, so I quickly changed the subject.
How are you settling in? Are you enjoying Koroa so far?
He smiled.
I knew the food would be different, and the air would smell different, and that the laws are different. It's just, in the past, when I visited, I've always known I was going home. I don't mean to seem ungrateful. I'm thankful His Majesty let us stay for more reasons than I can even list. But there are times I'm sad, knowing I won't ever see Isolde again.
I bent my head down and softened my tone, coaxing him to be more positive.
Surely you'll go back to visit. You have family there still, yes?
He gave me a very thin smile.
I do. And I'll miss them. But when we see King Quentin tomorrow, I hope with all of my heart it will be the last time I ever lay eyes on that man. Something about his words sent a chill through me, and I realized they were strangely similar to what Jameson had said.
If he's so awful, then I shall wish for that myself.
And for your family's happiness for as long as you live in Koroa.
Thank you, my lady. You are the gem everyone says you are.
I've wanted to tell him that, to my knowledge, no one but Jameson thought I was a gem. But it was such a kind thing to say, I didn't want to spoil it.
He tucked a loose strand of hair behind his ear. The rest of it was tied back with a cord, and I realized that must have been the piece that Jameson cut. And now Silas was left with a section of hair that would not obey. I also realize now that when the sword was brought near Silas's face, he did not flinch.
I guess I'll be on my way then, he said. Don't want to keep you.
What were you doing here, by the way? I threw out quickly. I wasn't ready for him to leave, not just yet. It's quite a distance from your corner of the castle. He pointed up. Like I said, we're great thinkers in Isolde, but not great creators. The art here, the architecture, there's something about it. I'd describe it if I could, but I don't have the words. He looked back to the windows. I like watching the light in the glass. It's calming.
It is, isn't it?
All the light cast down looks broken, but if you look up, you can see there was a plan all along. He nodded.
And you say you're no student.
I admire how you think, Lady Hollis. He bowed. I'll tell my mother to come see you after breakfast. We'll probably need Scarlet to stay and help us finish the pieces.
I really am sorry.
He shrugged, his expression easy again. It was a good idea. Especially given the king's tumultuous past. But could you give me some more notice next time you have a stroke of brilliance? A boy can only do so much. I giggled. Without thinking, I reached out to reassure him, taking his hand. I promise. Caught off guard, he looked down, staring at our hands. But he didn't rush to pull his away. And neither did I.
Thank you, my lady,
he whispered, nodding quickly before vanishing into the corridors of the castle.
I watched until he became another shadow of Kereskin, blending into the night. And then I looked down at my hand, stretching out my fingers as if I could remove the warm feeling in them. Shaking my head, I brushed the sensation away. Whatever had just happened, it was the least of my concerns right now. I turned back, looking at the explosion of color on the floor. If I wanted to, I could walk across the room and knock on the door to Jameson's apartments. I could tell a guard I needed to speak with the king urgently. I could tell him how I needed more time, how, as someone not born to the position, I was struggling to keep up. But I looked across the great room, considering. I cared for Jameson. I really did. That alone made me want to try harder, to look like I could handle it all, even if I wasn't quite there yet. The love of a king could drive one to attempt anything. And there was nothing as intoxicating as being adored by him and by the people who adored me for his sake. Tomorrow, I would have the privilege of telling my parents about my new rooms. I would get to see the lords as they conceded to Jameson's desires, knowing that I had been raised not only above every girl in the kingdom, but also above every available princess on the continent. I would, very soon, be queen. I gazed up at the window one last time, then walked back to my new rooms. It was a bit of a thrill, walking up the stairs to a room that wasn't just made for royalty, but was also a space independent from my parents. That alone was something to be grateful for. And all those things combined made me ready for anything. Chapter 14. The following morning was a bustle of activity as all of my worldly goods were brought up to my new rooms. Amid the chaos, a page arrived carrying a box. He was flanked by two guards who watched as he carefully placed the box on a table. Nora and Delia Grace exchanged a confused look as I gave the page a nod, saying he could open it. I thoroughly enjoyed the collective gasp from the girls as they took in the blinding sparkle of the rose-colored necklace.
"My goodness, Hollis!" Delia Grace said,
coming to peer over the edge of the box but not daring to touch it. This was what was happening that day in the king's chambers. He was letting me choose something for today.
"You did a spectacular job," Nora commented.
"I know that necklace," Delia Grace said, awestruck. "That was made for Queen Albraid herself, Hollis. That was made for a warrior."
I smiled, thinking I could use something made for going into war. I was reaching over to pick up the necklace when another page carrying a box walked in.
"Forgive me, Lady Hollis," he said. "His Majesty thought this would go well with your necklace."
He didn't wait for instructions to open his package, presumably acting on the king's orders to shock me. I reached over, clutching Delia Grace's hand when I took in the headpiece that Jameson had picked out. It was breathtaking, tipped with the same gemstones as the necklace, fanning out like the sun bursting over the horizon. Like the sun. He'd chosen this with care.
"Help me, ladies. It won't do if we're late."
I sat down at my vanity as Delia Grace took the headpiece and Nora carried the necklace.
"You will be exhausted by noon. It's so heavy."
Nora set the clasp, and once the weight of it was fully on me, I thought she might be right. But, tired or not, I wouldn't take this thing off my neck until sunset.
"Here,"
Delia Grace said, setting the headpiece in my hair and securing it with a few extra pins. I sat at the vanity, looking at myself. I'd never felt so beautiful. I wasn't sure if I looked like myself, but I couldn't deny that I looked like royalty. I swallowed. "I'm counting on you to rescue me if you catch me about to do anything foolish. I have to be poised and beautiful, so King Quentin doesn't have anything to critique." Nora brought her face next to mine, meeting my gaze in the mirror.
"I promise."
"Obviously," Delia Grace added. I nodded. Then let's go. I kept my hands gracefully clasped in front of me as we took the short walk from the Queen's apartments to the Great Room. I could feel myself growing more and more confident with every gasp and bowed head we passed. I could see in their eyes that my goal had been met. With my best gold dress and the headpiece Jameson had chosen, I looked like a radiant queen. Toward the head of the room, the Eastoffs waited, front and center as Jameson had requested. Lady Eastoff gave me a warm smile, mouthing the word beautiful and touching her hand to her heart. Beside her, Silas stumbled as he went to bow, trying to keep his eyes on both the floor and me. I suppressed a smile, then worked to give myself a steadier expression as I continued up to Jameson. His mouth hung slightly open, and it took him a moment to remember to extend his hand to receive me.
Goodness, Hollis, I forgot how to breathe.
He shook his head, staring at me as I blushed.
For all of my life, I shall never forget you in this moment. A rising queen and a rising sun.
Thank you, Your Majesty. But you must take some of the credit. This is beautiful, I said, touching the headpiece. I love it.
He shook his head.
I'm glad you enjoy the jewels, but I assure you, there isn't another woman in this room who could have done them justice.
We were still staring into one another's eyes when the fanfare sounded in the distance, announcing King Quentin was near. Jameson signaled for the musicians to be ready, and I moved my gaze to Delia Grace, who motioned for me to straighten my necklace, centering the largest jewel. By the time King Quentin and his party arrived, we were prepared, looking like a painting as he walked down the red woven carpet laid up the center of the great hall. I'd last seen him when he came for Queen Rhaenyra's funeral, and I desperately wished I'd taken note of him then. All I remembered was that my black dress was scratching my arm, and I spent the majority of the service trying to fix the sleeve. But that didn't matter, as I felt I knew him now. He was everything Lady Eastoff had told me. His hair was thinning, and though there were hints of yellow to it, most of it was gray. He walked with the assistance of a cane, his shoulders slightly hunched, and I wondered if part of the difficulty was the weight of so much fabric. But it was his expression that chilled me. As I looked into his eyes, I felt my heart go cold. There was something about him, as if he had both everything and nothing to lose, and the power accompanying those notions made him fearsome to behold. I looked away as quickly as I could, training my eyes on Queen Valentina. She truly wasn't much older than me, and that made the gap between her and King Quentin very great indeed. She smiled without showing teeth and kept her right hand settled protectively on her stomach. On the king's other side, Prince Hadrian was unmistakable. Yes, most sultans looked like they needed to see the sun, but he was closer to a ghost. I too wondered if he might be one soon. He kept his lips pressed tight, as if to hide the effort all this movement was taking, but the line of sweat across his brow was obvious. That man ought to be in bed. With these three before me, I realized I should have no fear. Koroa may have been a much smaller country than Isolde, but our king was far greater.
King Quentin, Jameson said loudly, opening his arms. I am so pleased you and your family have made your way to Koroa in safety. The Lady Hollis and I welcome you, as my father did, as a fellow sovereign placed by the gods, and as a dear friend.
Several quiet things happened at once. King Quentin rolled his eyes at the mention of the gods, Prince Hadrian lifted a shaky hand to wipe sweat from his upper lip, and I sighed in relief because we'd all been introduced. Jameson descended from the dais, which had been outfitted with enough seats for our guests, and went to greet King Quentin. He shook his fellow sovereign's hand with both of his own,
causing the room to burst into rapturous applause. My eyes kept flickering back to Valentina. She stood so tall, but I couldn't tell what was keeping her upright. Not happiness, it seemed, nor pride. She was unreadable. Jameson invited King Quentin, Valentina, and Hadrian to come and sit with us, and those in Quentin's party began to mingle with those of Jameson's court. The visit had officially begun. I turned to Valentina, who'd been placed next to me, hoping to make her feel comfortable. Your Majesty, Isolde is such a large country. Where about were you born? I asked. Her returning look was smug.
You don't speak first. I speak first.
I was taken aback.
My apologies. I assumed that the king's introduction was sufficient.
It was not.
Oh. I paused. I was quite certain I had this right. Well, what about now, as you've already spoken to me? She rolled her eyes.
I suppose.
What is it you asked? Where I was from? Yes, I replied, resurrecting the smile on my face. She inspected the many rings on her hands.
If I told you, would you even recognize the name?
Well, I doubt it. From what I hear, you've lived your whole life between your family's manor and Kareskin Castle, she said, raising an eyebrow. Between the two, I've had all I could want in the world, I admitted. Perhaps I could show you some of the architecture later. Some of the stonework on the...
No,
she answered quickly, cutting me off and placing her hand again on her stomach. It is very important that I have my rest. She lay back in her seat, looking bored, and I felt sure that I was failing Jameson. I sighed, looking away. I'd spent the better part of the last 24 hours worrying that I wouldn't be able to speak to Valentina at all. And now I'd be fine if I'd never heard her speak again. I looked out among the guests, searching for my parents. They would know how to start the conversation. Delia Grace might have an idea too. But I saw no one I recognized, save for the Eastoffs. I left my place to go ask for their help, catching them as they were warmly greeting another family. I didn't know you were coming, Lord Eastoff was saying, gripping an older gentleman tightly. I'm glad we get to tell you about how we're settling in face to face. A letter never quite catches everything. The gentleman and his wife stood with the young man who was clearly their son, based on his nose and cheekbones. Though the couple was all smiles at being reunited with their friends, their son looked as if he'd rather be mucking out a stall.
Scarlet, I whispered.
She turned.
Lady Hallis, you look radiant.
She smiled brightly, an almost sisterly warmth on her face.
Thank you, I replied, feeling a little more at ease with her. Listen, I need your help.
Please tell me you've thought of something for me to say to the Queen. She clearly has no interest in speaking with me.
Scarlet sighed. She's like that with everyone. It's probably why she only has one lady. But I did remember this morning that I've heard she's interested in food. If there's a chance to show her a new dish, she'll probably enjoy that. Here.
She grabbed my arm, pulling me forward.
Uncle Reed, Aunt Giovanna, this is Lady Hallis. She is to be queen.
Scarlet beamed with pride, and I placed a hand on hers.
It is a pleasure to meet you, my lady, Scarlet's aunt said. News of your upcoming betrothal has reached Isolde. People have spoken frequently of your beauty, but they have not done you justice. I felt my heart beat a little faster as I tried to take it all in. It was surreal to know that people in other countries had heard about me, knew my name. You are too kind, I answered, hoping to come across steadier than I felt.
These are the Northcotts, Silas explained. Our aunt and uncle, and this is our cousin Eton. I looked at the young man, who was content to glower at me.
Very nice to meet you, I said.
Yes, he replied curtly. Well, he was about as abrasive as Valentina. He only let a tiny smile come to his face when Saul came and wrapped his arms around him. Saul's head barely came up to his chest, and Eaton scratched his hands playfully through his cousin's hair. After that moment, he was back to being as impassive as a suit of armor.
We hear there is to be a joust, Lord Northcott said. I hope I will see one of you out there.
He pointed between Sullivan and Silas. Sullivan merely ducked his head, and Silas spoke for them both.
We might be on the sidelines this time, but I'm very excited to watch. This is the first time we've been here for something this festive. I don't know if things are done differently in Kuroa. I've never seen.
He looked to me for confirmation. I doubt it, I said, my tone teasing. Seeing as so much in Isolde is, well, let's say imported from Kuroa, I'm sure it will all be quite familiar. Most of them allowed that, chuckling at the observation. But not Eaton.
Isolde is just as sovereign as Kuroa. Our traditions just as valuable, our people just as sacred.
Absolutely. The privilege of knowing your cousins has taught me so much already about the world beyond Kuroa, I said, smiling at Scarlet. I hope to visit Isolde myself one day.
I hope so too, Eaton spat, his tone sarcastic. I'm sure you'll be greeted with fanfare at the border.
Eaton, his father snapped. There was a shuffling of feet and many ducked heads, but the comment went above me.
I don't understand, sir.
Eaton looked at me as if I were a child.
No, of course you don't. Why would you?
Eaton, his mother whispered urgently. How have I offended you? I asked, genuinely confused how both he and Valentina were so quick to find fault with me.
He smirked.
You? You cannot offend anyone.
He motioned to my headpiece, which was still making light dance every time I took a step.
You are an ornament.
I inhaled sharply, hating that I